The fourth waystone rose from the earth like a broken tooth, its surface pitted and scarred from centuries of wind. Ilse pressed her palms flat against it, seeking the cold that had always been the stone's first greeting, and found it, but her attention kept drifting westward, to the empty place where the third stone should have stood. No mound, no scattered fragments. Just a circle of trampled grass and the faintest suggestion of a depression in the earth, as though the ground itself had exhaled and forgotten to inhale. The cold was the first thing. The stone was always cold, but today the cold had teeth. It bit through her sleeves, through her skin, into the bones of her wrists, and she did not pull away. She stood with her hands on the stone, and she did not move. Behind her, the villagers cowered in the lee of a broken wall, 30 souls pressed together like sheep, their breath pluming in the gray air. Jaren stood at Ilse's shoulder, his staff planted in the cracked earth, his face turned toward the south where the darkness had been driven back but was not gone. It was only receding, there was a difference. "Go," Ilse said without looking back. Her voice was steady. It surprised her. "All of you, take the road south, do not stop, do not look behind you." A woman sobbed. Ilse couldn't tell whose voice it was. The sound was thin and reedy, almost swallowed by the wind. The sob came first thin, reedy, almost lost beneath the wind. Ilse turned from the stone and saw a woman doubled against the broken wall, her face buried in a shawl that had once been blue. 30 souls pressed together in the lee of the ruin, their breath pluming, their eyes fixed on the road behind Ilse where the gray sky pressed down like a lid. Ilse wiped her palms on her skirts, left damp smears on the rough wool, and spoke without looking back. "South, the road south, don't stop, don't look behind you." "Take her," Jaren said. He stepped back from Ilse's shoulder, turning toward the villagers. "She'll be safer with the group. Ilse can't hold this alone." Ilse felt something tighten in her throat, but she swallowed it down. She was not thinking of Alara right now. She was thinking of the hum, or the lack of it. The third waystone had been struck and shattered by Torvin's iron wedges, and the moment it broke, the hum had changed. It hadn't stopped, it had fractured. Like a bell cracked down the side, the sound had split into harmonics that clashed and canceled each other, and through those gaps the darkness had poured in. She could still feel the echo of it in her hands. The stone was vibrating, faintly, a tremor running through it like a pulse. But the pulse was wrong. It was a rhythmic, faltering, as though the stone itself were trying to remember how to sing and failing. "Go," Ilse said again, harder this time. The woman's voice cracked through the sobbing. "My daughter," Jaren's hand closed over her elbow, firm but not ungentle, and he turned toward the huddle of villagers. "She'll be safer with the group," he said, his voice carrying the flat authority of someone who had spent 7 years learning which battles were worth fighting. "Ilse can't hold this alone." Ilse felt something tighten in her throat, but she swallowed it down. She was alone. The wind picked up, carrying the smell of wet earth and something else, something like the air after lightning strikes, sharp and metallic and wrong. The gray sky pressed down on the hollow like a lid, and the grass at the edge of the road had already begun to turn, blades stiffening and graying, brittle as old parchment. Ilse closed her eyes. She thought of her uncle. She thought of the ledger, of the entries that faded as the years passed, of the names of travelers who never returned, of the nights he spent sitting by the fire, listening to the stone's hum. He protected the road, she had thought in that moment, standing before the ruined second waystone. But she had been wrong. He hadn't just protected it, he had sung to it. Every night, every evening, he had placed his hands on the stones and he had sung, and the song had been the thing that kept the darkness at bay. Not music, intent, will. The song required neither melody nor instrument, only the absolute, unyielding certainty that the road mattered, that the people who walked it mattered, that memory itself was worth defending. Her uncle had held the road for 40 years with nothing but his hands and his stubbornness. And when he died, the hum had weakened. And when the Baron's men came and Torvin drove his wedges into the second stone, the fracture had begun. And now the third stone was gone, and Ilse stood at the last one, and she had to decide whether she was strong enough to be the song. She opened her eyes. The darkness was coming. It didn't move like a storm or a flood. It moved like forgetting. It crept along the road in waves of grayness, consuming color and warmth and sound as it advanced, and where it passed, the world went flat and silent, as though someone had drawn a charcoal sketch over the living landscape and erased everything that wasn't necessary. Ilse placed both hands on the stone and pushed her will into it. It was like pushing against a river. The resistance was immense, ancient, and indifferent. The stone did not care about her daughter's fever. It did not care about the farm, the wheat, the debt, the 50 crowns that haunted her like a shadow. It did not care about anything except its own persistence, its own slow, geological patience. She had to make it care. She had to pour herself into the rock until the rock became an extension of her body, until the hum rose from the stone and through her and into the air and out along the road like a bridge of sound. She pushed harder. "No," Ilse said, the word cut through the wind, flat and final. "No." Something gave. A crack deep inside the rock, like ice splitting on a frozen lake. The hum rose a sound so low it was less a vibration than a pressure in the chest, a weight behind the sternum that made her ribs ache. It wasn't loud. It was barely audible over the wind, but it was there. Solid, persistent, unyielding. The grayness stopped. It didn't retreat. It simply halted, like a wave breaking against a cliff face. And for one suspended moment, the darkness hung motionless at the edge of the road, and the stone hummed, and Ilse stood with her hands on the rock and tears ran hot and fast down her face because she was exhausted and terrified, and she had never felt anything so alive. Then the darkness pushed back. It came on harder, a wall of cold and silence and forgetting, and the hum faltered. The stone shuddered beneath her palms. A hairline fracture appeared at the top, running from one side to the other, and she felt it through her hands a sickening lurch, as though the stone were about to split clean in two. "No," Ilse said. She didn't raise her voice. She didn't need to. The word went into the stone like a nail. "No." She pressed harder. Blood ran from her palms where the stone had cut her, warm and bright against the gray surface, and she didn't care. She poured everything into the rock her fear. Her love, the memory of her uncle's hands on these same stones, the sound of Alara's laughter in the yard, the smell of damp earth and wood smoke, the taste of bread baked in the morning, the weight of the ledger in her hands, the names of the dead, the faces of the villagers huddled behind her, Jaren's voice telling her to go, the woman's sob. The cartwheel catching on stone she poured it all into the stone, and the stone drank it, and the hum grew louder, and the darkness pushed, and the stone held. The crack widened. Ilse felt it through her fingertips, a widening gap, a separation, and she screamed not a word. Just a sound, raw and animal and desperate, she threw herself forward, pressing her forehead against the cold rock, her body weight adding to the pressure, her whole self becoming a lever against the fracture. The stone groaned, a deep tectonic sound, the sound of earth shifting under mountains, and the crack stopped widening. It held. Barely. A hairline split, no wider than a knife blade, running across the face of the stone, and the hum continued, ragged and strained but unbroken. The darkness receded. Not far, not all the way back, but enough. It pulled away to the edge of the road, to the boundary where the hum reached, and there it stopped, pressing against the invisible barrier like water against glass, and Ilse stood with her forehead on the stone and her hands bleeding and her breath coming in ragged gasps, and she knew, with a certainty that settled into her bones like cold iron, that this was what her uncle had done every night for 40 years. That this was the duty she had inherited. That the road did not need a hero. It needed a keeper, and she was here. Behind her, the wind carried the faintest sound a child crying, soft and intermittent, the clatter of a cartwheel rolling south, the murmur of voices huddled together against the cold. Life moving away from the dark. Life continuing. Ilse lifted her head. Her face was streaked with tears and blood and dirt, and her arms trembled so violently she could barely keep them raised. But she kept her hands on the stone. She kept her feet planted in the cracked earth. She kept her will locked against the fracture like a brace against a collapsing wall. The darkness pressed, the hum held. Ilse, keeper of the road, stood alone at the last stone and refused to move.